Hello. Welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
All right, welcome seekers to podcast number 55 of God Beyond the Bible, a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We have any shout outs this week?
Yeah, our shout outs this week are to Jack with two C's and our listeners in Mesquite, Texas.
All right, thanks guys for listening. We appreciate it. What about you, Dad? Do you have our quote of the week to go?
I do have the quote of the week. I had to get up, move around, and make sure a radio was turned off that I thought might start talking here in a minute. Quote of the week. What day is it? It's today, squeaked Piglet. Ah, my favorite day, said Pooh.
I like that.
I do like that. I do. Okay, well, last week in episode 54, we researched and discussed the somewhat enigmatic topic of the Trinity. As we discovered, it's a doctrine that has enjoyed a prominent place in a lot of our denominations, yet it's a doctrine that didn't get its birth until the early 4th century at the Council of Nicaea, which was presided over and heavily influenced by Roman Emperor Constantine. This is one of those doctrines that's almost sort of dreamed up, and there has been a frantic scramble ever since to shape enough New Testament texts around it to give it some foundation. We love hearing your thoughts and comments on this, along with any of our other somewhat controversial topics that we have.
Well, and I had to point out one of our listeners, Blake, told me this morning, he said, you know, I've never really thought about it, but why did God have to tell the others that He wanted to make man in their image if they're all the same person?
Yeah, that's a good question.
He said they shouldn't have had to have a conversation.
Of course, that goes a little deeper, and that's saying you're considering that when He said, let us, that He's talking about God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, instead of Elohim, the gods.
This is that's
true. Okay. Tracy, that's you for today's topic.
So today's topic is exiting the organized church, or a much longer but more detailed title might be Things to Think About and What to Expect Should I Decide to Leave the Organized Church.
And we did an episode last year titled The Decline of the Church, and it might have been Decline of the Modern Church. I can't remember what
the
title
was. Decline of the Modern Church. It was a two-part.
Okay. And I didn't go back to look and see what number it was, what episode number. I could have, but I just didn't have time. Well, that episode was sort of focused on statistics, percentages of which age groups were most active, or, you know, which age groups were most active in attending regular religious service. We think the consensus is, both by the numbers and our own personal observation, that the support for the church as an organization is on the decline, both in attendance and financially.
Mm-hmm. One of the fascinating details that our research turned up is that while the percentage of people who profess a belief in God has remained the same or even slightly increased in the past three decades, the number of people regularly attending religious services has declined sharply. And depending on which poll you look at, some show as little as 5%, some as much as 15% of the believing population who say they regularly attend services.
And we also mentioned that in polls dealing with religious and moral issues, one must take into account the halo effect that can greatly affect the final numbers, which the halo effect is essentially, if Tabby's asking me if I drink or something like that, I'm going to naturally want to give her the answer that I think she wants
to hear. Actually, it'd be a question sort of like, maybe if you're filling out a doctor's form or something to you.
How many times do you drink?
Do you, you know, regularly? Well, you're, you know.
Infrequently.
Yeah. Whatever it is. And we're gonna always favor
that. But it's to make us appear better in the eyes of our peers.
So what that really does to that poll, we're talking about the 5 to 15%, it would probably be much lower if everyone told the actual truth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you just asked regular, we talked about that on the episode. If you ask regular religious services, what's regular? Thanksgiving and
right. If you're there every Christmas and every Easter, then that's regular
then
for
is,
you.
That is regular, right? Mm-hmm. So back to today's topic is exiting the church or and talking about people who, well, we just know some people are exiting the church or the churches would be full. So let us begin by saying that all of us here at God Beyond the Bible have been active in the organized church, and well, at least until the past 6 months or so, at which we all exited the same organization at the same time. Now, let us also say we still love, associate with, and pretty much stay in touch with the folks who still attend and are part of that local church organization.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that we understand completely that there are fantastic people in organized churches all around the world.
Right.
This isn't a people issue.
It's not a church, and we're not encouraging. We're going to talk about that later, but you know, a little disclaimer right now. We're not encouraging it, but there are people who the church is just not working for them for whatever reason.
Okay, so let's begin, and without making this a session of pointing out the problems surrounding the church organization itself, let's talk about some reasons that people may have for exiting the modern organized church.
Where do you even start?
I think we kind of get into that in the third part of this. We sort of talk about it.
But it's kind of a question you can ask yourself and kind of, if you're contemplating it, what are your reasons? Because it helps sometimes to pinpoint those.
So, millennials seem to be catching a lot of flack, and I am part of the millennial generation, so... And in publications and from the pulpit, they're kind of pointed out as being the main group that's leading the exodus, if you will, from the church. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I just know it's true. I know from being in the pastoral ministry, it is true.
But it doesn't...
There are fewer millennials than there are my generation, which is Generation X.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, all right. Speaking from personal experience, a large number of these millennials were in the organized church as small children, even through their teenage years, but many, if not most, after graduation, left and never returned as regular participants in the organization. Now, why do you think that is? I think it's because we don't give as much pizza.
Organized religion has that tendency to give the answer of it's because of higher education and the ideas that they put in these kids' heads. But I found a quote online this past week, and it's something that a millennial actually tweeted, but it says, many millennials resent church because their parents were good at church, but not good at life. They struggle to attend a place that consumed their parents' time, but never transformed their private life.
That's true.
That is.
I mean, that's depending on your perspective, that's a true statement. Who's number six?
I'll go.
Okay.
It appears, at least in our little part of the world, that even those millennials who were raised in church, to put it in church lingo, are not raising their own children regularly attending church. And why do you think that is?
Not as much pizza.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons.
Never had pizza.
Let me justify that. Let me validate what I'm saying. You guys know where I'm going.
I do.
I came early in the pastoral ministry where, you know, the kids tend to gravitate where the most milk and cookies and pizza parties and float trips and whatever the thing, ski trips or whatever the church does, and they gravitate. So basically, I think I'm just going to say there's some psychology involved here. Those grew up as young children, just the church giving me, taking me, doing for me. Then suddenly they're in parenthood and they're in the next role, which is supposed to be leaders in the church. And they're saying, whoa, why did the church quit giving me? And it's not, or they're saying, I want my kids to have what I had.
Right.
And they're thinking of, you know, and it is, I'm not just talking about the pizza to eat, but the good times and all the stuff that went. So, you know, maybe that plays a role in it.
It very well could be.
So we mentioned earlier that some of the reasons we think folks might use to justify exiting the organized church, and as one would expect, these aren't quote unquote legitimate reasons to leave in the mind of those who are struggling to keep the organization alive. But are they legitimate? Or to rephrase, how does one justify their decision to leave the organized church?
Well, perhaps we should back this question up with, to whom do we need to justify our decision? That's the big question.
Yeah.
Do we need to justify the decision with the church, with ourselves, with our family, with God? Where do we have need to be in that justifying mode?
Right. So maybe the last question would be easier to answer if we asked ourselves, what is my true deep down motivation for attending to begin with? Is it to maintain a persona? Is it tradition? Is it because I think I'm making points with the big guy?
I stole that from a line, I think, of Seinfeld. But yeah. Anyway.
Did it begin as a quest to know God? And perhaps I found myself lulled into programs and activities as a substitute?
And that may sound a little harsh, but sometimes we do. We get in there and we get in the church and we're looking for something. And I think maybe we forget we were seeking something when we went in there. And all of a sudden we've got all the camaraderie. We're involved. We're doing all this stuff. And maybe that's
well, and I can be 100% honest here and say that I can probably say,
making
yes.
points with the big guy?
I can say yes to every single one of these questions at some point during
some
my church going years. Yeah.
But what does that say about God if we can get
brownie points for being in church?
Bribed and manipulated is a little strong, but that's really what it is, ain't it?
It is. Okay, so with that thought, we're going to close out segment one, regroup, and return with part two of episode 55 of God Beyond the Bible.
And welcome back, Seekers. Today's topic is on exiting the organized church. And we laid the foundation in part one by asking ourselves some difficult and kind of uncomfortable in some ways questions, but they were necessary.
They are necessary, yeah. Let's take this segment and act as though, for whatever reason, that we're contemplating exiting the church. Let's talk about the emotions we're bound to experience in such a decision. And let us add, this will never be an easy decision to make, no matter the reason, even if you've been sorely hurt or disappointed by your church group or organization.
Yeah.
So what are some of those emotions? Let's name some of them, we think.
Guilt. I mean,
that's a big one.
That's a big one for me.
Yeah.
Just
guilt.
The guilt.
Guilt from about what?
Everything.
It's guilt from...
You're not making as many points with the big guy.
I mean, truthfully, I feel like I'm... No, but you do. You almost feel like you're doing something wrong by not getting up and going to church on Sunday morning. Or I felt like
even
for
when
a long
I'm exhausted
time.
And I know I need... One of my new favorite words. I know I need Shabbat. I know I need rest. But there's that sort of inner voice that's like, well, I know you need rest, but you need to give God his 2 hours. And then you can come home after that
and rest. Do you think it makes it easier for me... I mean, seriously, you think it makes it easier for me, though, that I've got up and gone as a pastor for 35 years, whether I felt like it, whether I wanted to, no excuses.
Well,
yeah. Couldn't make any excuse. So maybe I'm just thinking, hey, I'm going to take up all of those days that all the people I pastored, they took off, they did, woke up this morning.
That's what I thought. I thought you were going to ask, does it make it easier on you when we're there and we don't want to be anywhere?
No. But anyway, guilt is a big one. You can feel guilty. But guilt doesn't serve any purpose. And the people who associate guilt with God, we've got an identity problem.
Yes.
Okay. And especially as a pastor, what about pressure? Did you ever feel pressured? Like, there's no one to do a sermon if I'm not there, so I have no choice but to do this.
Well, it's true. But then the pressure for when you leave the church, there's that pressure. Where do you get that pressure from?
Yeah.
Everybody from the church you leave.
Yes.
know, you feel pressured.
And they don't, I don't think they mean it.
No.
In that way.
They want you to feel, they want you to just, you know, to come back or whatever. And so you feel really pressured. And,
But then you have pressure from people too who want you to start coming to their.
I was about to say, the people that want you to come and, come and try our church. It's different. And I know we hear that all, and we say that all the time.
And then as pastor's daughters, Tabby and I kind of got another side because, like they said earlier, you had retired from pastoring at the same, and we get the questions constantly about you too. Well, why did your dad, what is he doing? Is he going, what's...
I think he's drinking a lot and he's
Oh my gosh.
I'm just making a joke.
But
I think he's completely went off the other end.
My gosh.
What about, now we didn't really, but what about isolated and outcast? Some people, you know, the church was a big part of their social life. And all
of a
sudden,
if you look at certain religious groups, there is a, you know, that's what they do. You leave the church, you lose your family and everything, if you want to look at it that way.
And that kind of goes with the ostracized and criticized, doesn't it?
And I think criticized is a little bit different than, I think I have experienced some criticism without necessarily them ostracizing me, you know, but the criticism is real.
Well, that's the people that criticize behind you. Back to ostracizers, do it to your face.
It's true.
I've seen, but with the ostracizing, I've talked to people who never really attend church, and I had a friend who came down here and she lived for a while and she didn't really attend church, and she told me at one point, she said, I feel like I'm not part of anything here because I don't go to church. She said, because
and
everyone,
the Bible Belt,
she said, everyone I talk to goes, oh, well, where do you go to church at?
Then she only must talk to 15% of the population.
Are you wound up tonight or what?
Just say it. I'm sorry.
So with what other life experience would you compare leaving the church, especially if it's something that has been a part of your life for a long period of time? I mean, would you equate it with it being kind of like a divorce?
It probably is.
The death of a loved one? The loss of a job or a career?
Well, in that backup question there, ask the question.
Do you think that many of the same emotions are involved in some of these life-altering situations? I mean, after all, guys, leaving the organized church is pretty life-changing, isn't it?
It is life-changing if you've devoted, I mean, if you've been someone who's built your life around the organized church. Well, do you think we should conclude this segment by stating the obvious? We don't believe anyone who makes the decision to exit the organized church does it on a whim or takes it lightly. And this is especially true if you've spent the greater part of your life attending church, simply because this is truly a life-changing decision and experience.
It is. And I think it's really the spiritual equivalent of selling off everything that you own and moving across the country to start a new life. It's not a decision you can make instantly, and it's not something that you can execute instantly. It's a process that you have to go through.
That's a good thought.
Okay, so with that thought, we're going to conclude this segment, and we'll be right back with part 3 of episode 55 of God Beyond the Bible.
Welcome back to segment 3 of God Beyond the Bible on our episode of Exiting the Organized Church. In part 1, we referred to some points that we made in a 2019 episode of God Beyond the Bible on the decline of the modern church. And by observing the patterns in our local church organizations, and statistical research seems to support the pattern nationwide, if not worldwide, we can't deny that enthusiasm for and participation, attendance, and financial support for the modern organized church is in a sharp decline.
And then in part 2, we discuss some of the emotions we may expect to encounter if and when we should decide to make the life-changing decision to exit the church. And one of them, the girls were so quick want to get me off of the air on that last segment after a couple of those statements. Now, we didn't talk about one emotion. And let's talk about dealing with the text, the phone calls and visits, or just bumping into or associating with folks with whom we attended church. Now, in a lot of situations, we must still interact with many of those people at school, work, or maybe they participate in other organizations. What about all that? How does that play in?
I think it kind of wraps back around, honestly, a little bit into this sort of guilt thing.
Or the pressure.
Yeah. Because I do feel, and I know that's not the way people mean it or think about it, but for that first month or so when everyone is kind of bombarding you, and then you feel a little bit guilty because you're like, I have really enjoyed just sleeping in and resting.
Especially if you're the personality type where you don't want to upset people and you want, you're a people pleaser.
Yeah.
But, and I will say too, and that has kind of hindered, DJ and I have talked about, because we do have two kids that are growing up, and there are some pluses to them having, especially with our kids being homeschooled, to having some social interaction and stuff. But it's almost like we don't, if we visit a church, we're scared to go to one around here because we're afraid we will be pressured. Well, you only came once and you didn't come back. You know, it's very, you know, it's different.
And we talked about this before. It's easy to get sucked in.
It is.
There's a vacuum there that'll pull you right in.
Okay. But in this segment, we're going to take a moment and discuss some of the reasons that we ourselves and others we have talked to may bring someone to the decision to take a break from or even permanently exit the church.
And that's all some people do. Granted, some people step back for a while, get their spirituality kind of figured out in their head on who they are. Then they go back to the church with a different attitude because it's like, okay, I'm here. Nobody's going to tell me what I know or how I believe or anything. I'm just going to be here for the social.
Sure. Or sometimes they start seeking out a place that more clearly aligns with
what they believe.
So before we go any farther, we need to stop and state that even though others may interpret your decision as abandoning your faith, in our personal experience, and based on the testimony of a lot of others, nothing could be farther from the truth.
But that's what we always want to think of. Oh, that person's just, they've dropped out of church. Yep. They're backsliding.
Here's a real, this is me being honest. When I took a step, when we left the church and I decided to take a break from going, I realized that church had really become my faith. I did my 2 hours on Sunday, and that was, it's become so much more real, and God and my relationship with Him has evolved because it's up to me. I don't feel like I'm just fulfilling an obligation to be there on a Sunday, and that's it.
I feel like I have a richer and deeper connection to the Creator now than I did before, and I know that our cumulative relationship between me and my husband is better because he's always been a little more open-minded toward things than I was for a long time. And now we just have that sort of openness where we can sit and discuss the millions of possibilities.
What if? Yeah. Well, what if God turns out to be...
Right.
You know.
Yeah, anything.
From a race where there are hundreds or thousands like him. Okay. Well, you've probably noticed that we keep repeating the phrase the organized church, and it's because it's the deficiencies in the organizational part itself that most of us find objectionable, and individual, you know, we don't need the sanction or the approval of any human, I've got man written down there, but any human orchestrated organization to be part of the universal church, whose only prerequisite for membership is believing, right?
Right.
And I want to say here, too, that when I think of believing, I don't really picture any particular creed or anything like that. For me, believing is just knowing that there's something more.
Right.
Sure.
Okay, so let us repeat one more disclaimer. The intent of this episode is not to persuade anyone to leave their church. We only want to be an encouragement to those who have made this decision and are struggling with the consequences associated with that decision.
That's all we're talking about, because obviously there are people whose families before them, they grew up maybe in church, and now they're not attending. They don't have that enthusiasm. And there's a lot of factors. We talked about that in the decline of the church. You know, we're a more mobile society. We're a technologically advanced society. I mean, let's be honest. If you're interested in hearing something to boost your faith, it's available 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So let's look at a partial list of reasons that a person may find themselves contemplating, you know, either changing churches or leaving the organized church altogether.
Well, A and B kind of goes together, so we'll just put them together. It's, you know, how does lack of personal spiritual growth when you're in the church and you've been, and all of a sudden you realize, I'm right where I was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe feeling as though something is missing, a void that isn't being filled in our personal spiritual life, in our spiritual growth. What about that? I think it comes to a place where we think, I don't think knowing God is something you ever just get comfortable with. I think it's something you have to pursue. It's ever a pursuit. It's always a pursuit.
And I think,
and sometimes, you know, that pursuit gets capped.
I think that became a big problem for me. I had my God in the box and I knew all of the answers. I could go through the file and tell you all of it. But then I had to snap the lid shut pretty fast too, because you don't want him to get out of the box.
No, don't want him out. That's right. Tavia, you see?
Okay, what about a sense of increasing pressure and demands on our personal time and resources?
And I think that's legitimate. A lot of people thought, well, that's just selfish. You're just selfish. I know people, we've talked about this before. I don't have to look very far to see people that have a church activity minimum of 3 times a week, and often as many as 5 times a week there's an activity at the church.
Well, and I sit back and... sometimes you don't even realize it's happening until you're sitting there going, oh, I do not want to go do this activity. I'm tired.
Or what about when you're feeling really good because it's Friday evening and you're driving home? You say, oh, it's Friday. I'm so good. We've got that thing at the church tonight at 7 o'clock.
We're going to have to go back and get a veggie dish. Yeah,
you get that text that says...
where you guys at?
Yeah.
Well, and everyone can remember when we, you know, revivals used to be a huge thing in the 5-night, sometimes 6 or 7-night revivals. And by the end of it, there was no one happy. I mean, everyone was exhausted.
Everyone's going, can we take a month off church now?
It's like, I ought to be building up some time here. And we're not making light of this, but we're talking about the things people think that they don't talk about if they're sitting in the pew every week.
And these are things that we've thought about. We've discussed.
This is personal experience, mostly.
I've been the person. I've helped preach revivals where they had a different preacher. You know, we've tried all kinds of new things and have a different preacher. You always dread being that last preacher or the last night because you think, what am I going to do?
You always want to be the first guy, don't you?
Yeah, get that, because everybody's enthusiastic. But what about that? You know, we're talking about the increasing pressure and demands on our personal time and resources. Resources, let's don't forget that. There's demands financially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even more than just what you put in the offering plate.
Especially, I think, as a parent, when you have kids, when you start talking about church camp, pizza parties, bringing snacks, who's gonna...
But, you know, it's not just that. And I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but a couple weeks ago, DJ and the kids and I got out for a Sunday drive. It was a pretty day, and we just got out and went for a drive. First of all, there's too many churches to count, but we went through this town that probably had a population of maybe 200, and they were houses that were older, you could tell, low income. And you pass the church, one of the couple of churches, but there's this huge metal new structure church, and it just kind of broke my heart, because I thought, you know, I know that the people in the town have to be funding this church when it looks like, I don't know how to say it without it coming across.
When it looks like people in the community are in need.
There was a song that I can't remember. I just heard it one time, and it was called In the Shadow of the Steeple. And it was talking about how many people were heartbroken, how many people were hungry, how many all in the shadow of the steeple. And I thought, wow. Of course, it never was real popular
in the church. What about that sense that enough is never enough? You know, the anxiety that's associated with this perceived underlying message that if we want God to be pleased, and that we must constantly prove our devotion and our worthiness by consistently increasing our offering of time and resources, usually through the organization.
And that's what it comes down to. The Christian faith has unfortunately in many cases become a religion where enough is never enough. God always wants more from you. But that goes all the way back to serving, back to Egypt, to the Jews, to the Israelites in Egypt. Yeah. That goes all the way back to them, because if you had a good crop this year and you want a better crop next year, you give more.
But you have to realize, too, that benefits Manuel, because he can employ that guilt tactic.
Well, it benefits the organization, doesn't it?
That's what I'm talking about.
Keeps the organization going.
I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and it was a podcast by a preacher, fairly well known, and he was talking...
It wasn't me.
No. He was talking about these people who go out and they do good things within their community with their own private money.
Right.
And he said, that's good and that's great that you do that, but keep in mind that that's not giving money to your church. You still have to do that too.
Oh yeah. Well, all of us have heard, and we'll get off the money thing, but all of us have heard, well, you haven't given anything until you give that first 10%. And then you're not giving. That's God. You owe that.
And that's the minimum.
You owe that. So you haven't given anything. You haven't been generous. You've just paid your debt. I've heard that said from the pulpit.
Yeah, and you say, you know, we need to move off the money thing, but let's face it, that's a huge, for a lot of people, you know, that is a huge problem.
We did our deal on tithing. You can listen to the one on tithing and where we go into, we use the Bible itself and show you that we have drugged something forward here. It's for the money. Wonder how many churches, I asked Tawana this the other day, and I wasn't being ugly about it. I don't want you to think this is any way we're trying to demean the church, but how many churches you think would still be around if we just absolutely stopped all the money? How many churches would still have pastors?
Very few.
Huh?
Very few.
It's just a question, and there's a question we won't know, but usually when a church stops the money to the pastor, it's to get rid of him.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Sometimes our personal spiritual pursuit has outgrown the level of spirituality the organization is comfortable to offer, and it causes us to feel spiritually stifled. I mean, there are people sitting in the church that's like, okay, I know the message about Jesus and being saved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it almost goes back to in the book of Hebrews, when he said at a time, I think it was Hebrews, when he said at a time when you ought to be teachers, you have need to be taught yourself. You're ever relaying the fundamentals, the foundations of your faith. And you know, that's as far as some people ever hear in the church, especially in a really super evangelical type church that's just, you know, we're going to get people. So all they hear that single message of salvation in various ways. And it's all going to end up with at the end of the service, it's going to end up with a
altar call.
And I'm just
but
saying.
But it's true.
And I could see where people who are pursuing seekers could be stifled.
Right.
And there's that moment that goes along with it too, though, where you're sitting there and you're going, I can't agree with this doctrine anymore. No. I can't, you know, I can't sit here and act like I approve of this.
And that's kind of goes because we've outgrown.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've outgrown.
Another reason that we may be contemplating changing your churches or leaving the church altogether is, you know, we may be disappointed in the direction the church has taken in becoming so involved in the social and political unrest that's being experienced in society. Possibly we might even feel like the organization is contributing to the division and unrest.
And that's putting it politely.
Yeah.
Because I know many, I don't know how it is around the world or where are people that listen, but I know in our area, in the rural church area, politics gets preached as much as Jesus on the cross does. It's almost as though
that somehow by how we vote, that shows our
or how we stand, how we stand on social issues, what we're against. Mm-hmm. Really, it comes if you're against what you're against is more important than sometimes it seems than what you're for.
So while endeavoring to maintain a non-judgmental attitude, we may just be downright put out with the hypocrisy and the mean-spirited direction the church seems to gravitate towards sometimes.
And it is. There's been some... There has been some mean things, awful things done to people, real human beings, in the name of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And this generation, this era that we live in... That's nothing new.
No.
It's been Christians against Christians many times because they didn't believe, you know, back in the Dark Ages. And if you didn't share the right kind of, well, you know, we just talked about that, the Trinity thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Punishable by death sometimes. Well, perhaps we discover we have no personal relationship, and that the organization itself has been a substitute for a deep personal relationship with this great force of good we call God. And I'm just saying, we can easily substitute all of the activities, mm-hmm. all the programs, all the deal. And it's like, well, how are you spiritually?
Yeah.
How are you? We don't ever really ask ourselves, am I happy spiritually? But we've got the idea. We've been convinced that we're not supposed to be happy.
No, you're supposed spiritually, to be
spiritually, you're supposed to be really, sad and angry. A little bit, and all kinds. I mean, isn't that the message we're kind of getting sometimes?
Because we have the idea that Christianity is not freeing. It is a set rules, and you have to be sure you don't misstep because
you should be afraid.
Instead of being liberating,
yes,
it's confining.
It is.
So, in many church organizations, I mean, that's just the truth.
Yeah.
So are there any others?
Nah, I can't think of anything.
All right. So with that groundwork laid, next week, we're going to try to get into the nuts and bolts of, if I decide it's the path for me, how do I exit the organized church?
And there's probably people going to be listening to this and probably thinking, oh, what's the deal? Just walk out. But there's an emotional attachment there. It's not that easy. It's hard to just walk away.
Especially when you've put years and years of your life into an organization.
Well, it's an investment.
It is.
You have an investment in, and it's hard to walk away from anything you have investment in. Relationship or monetary or whatever. Are we ready to conclude?
I believe so.
Well, the truth is, many may listen to today's topic and conclude that in spite of all of its problems, you're very happy right where you are, and the organization you're part of feels your personal spiritual needs completely, and just want to say it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. And there are many who are satisfied and feel blessed right where they are. But again, even those who are active in the organization can't deny the decline of enthusiasm and participation in the way we're doing church today. We predict, as with any organization, and as history has shown us, even in the church, that the way we do it will either demand we address the situations and make necessary adjustments, or stubbornly continue doing things the same way, expecting a different result. Now, when I brought this topic up at the last interfaith pastors meeting I attended while I was still pastoring, and made the point I just made, one of the pastors commented, isn't continuing to do things the same way, expecting a different result, the definition of insanity?
Very well said. So with that said, we're going to conclude our episode. We wish God's grace, peace, and love on each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Tabitha did that without a script. She did.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com. Or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.